And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by the good folks, Melissa Gott and her team over at The Law Group. Visit them online, lawgroupnc.com, or give them a call, 910-251-6088. Well, as we sit here this morning and check the official Schumer shutdown clock, it reads 21 days, 7 hours, 2 minutes, and 20 seconds, putting us now in day 22 of the federal government shutdown. This is a live look as to what is going on the floor of the United States Senate right now. Just a couple of minutes here after 7 o'clock in the morning, there is an all-night session that is going on in the United States Senate. This is pretty funny. You've got Democrat Senator Jeff Merkley out of the state of Oregon, who has been speaking on the Senate floor alone pretty much all night, just complaining and griping about how terrible Donald Trump is and how terrible the Republicans are, as this is the current status and the current situation that is unfolding in Washington, D.C. I saw a couple of clips on social media from the senator this morning, but now he is currently reading a book. He's been essentially reading through this book pretty much all night, called How Democracy Dies. About 7 hours ago, he was on chapter 2. That was at midnight Eastern time. He is now on chapter 7 and is literally just reading through a book. Let's dip into this and see what the great senator from Oregon's got to say.
2016, President Barack Obama nominated Appellate Judge Merrick Garland to fill Scalia's seat. No one doubted Garland was a qualified candidate. By all accounts, he was an ideological moderate, but for the first time in American history, the U.S. Senate refused to even consider an elected president's nominee for president. As we have seen, the Senate has always used forbearance in exercising its advice and consent in the selection of Supreme Court justices. Since 1866, every time a president has moved to fill a Supreme Court vacancy prior to the election of his successor, he'd have been allowed to do so. So this was the first time. This was the first time a U.S. Supreme Court vacant seat has been stolen from one president and delivered to the next.
Wow.
The world had changed by 2016. Now,
all right, I think you've heard pretty much all you need to understand the situation that is unfolding in Washington, D.C. right now. Democrats remain not having any answers for this shutdown. It is called the Schumer shutdown. Democrats in the United States Senate refuse to vote for a continuing resolution, which, by the way, I'll note at this point in time, and there's some rumor up in Washington, D.C. that Senate Republicans and House Republicans are working on an additional continuing resolution. If they pass this CR, let's just assume, and it's not going to happen, but let's just assume that a couple of Democrats in the Senate voted for this CR today. The CR only funds the government, I think it's through November 21st. So we would be back in this same situation less than 4 weeks from now, right? Because they have let this thing drag on for 20 some odd days at this point. Now, Republicans have to come forth with another continuing resolution to keep the government funded. I mean, they don't have to. The government's been shut down for 22 days. I got an interesting clip from Greg Gutfeld coming up in a little bit. Excuse me. From Greg Gutfeld coming up about the shutdown and about the ramifications and the impacts. Looks like the senator is actually moving around right now. Maybe he's off of reading his book. Let's see what he's got to say.
Block any Supreme Court appointment by a president of the other party. That's not our responsibility.
Maybe not.
That's not our charge. Our charge is to decide if a person is suited. And for the first time in U.S. history, this chamber said there will be no debate and no vote on the nominee that President Obama had put forward. We were not proceeding to exercise our appropriate constitutional responsibility to weigh in.
Okay, well, I guess I lied. I thought something exciting was going to happen. I guess that's foolish of me to think that. So that's what the Democrats have got going on. And that's the best that they've got. I mean, over the last couple of weeks, we've really seen kind of what I will describe as the struggle that the Democrat Party is currently dealing with. I mean, you look at the No Kings protests, the 7 million people that protested this weekend. It's not an inspiring group of individuals. If you missed yesterday's show, I would highly encourage you to listen to it or send to your friends, send to folks that are politically inclined here in North Carolina. As I went through and described how North Carolina is not a 50-50 state, I played some audio, some clips from individuals speaking against redistricting in North Carolina, another uninspiring group of individuals. And then the best that Democrats can do this morning is they've got Senator Jeff Merkley from Oregon, who is currently and is on an all-night session on the Senate floor reading through a book called How Democracy Dies, or how Democracies Die, singular, D-I-E. A 2018 book by a couple of Harvard political scientists talking about how terrible Republicans are and how amazing Democrats are. So that's what you've got currently unfolding on the floor of the United States House. This is not a party that we should be taking seriously. Now, I'm not saying put down your guard. I'm not saying that Democrats can't win elections. That's not what I'm saying at all. But as it relates to this issue, which is the government shutdown, you really can't take the Democrats seriously, can you? I mean, you can't objectively look at the things that they are trying to get done and say, oh, this is a group of serious political minds. I mean, they are trying to relitigate and rehash the One Big Beautiful Bill that was signed into law back in July by Donald Trump, passed through the House, passed through the Senate. They are trying to reinstate funding to PBS, even though essentially every PBS and NPR affiliate across the country has raised the dollars that they lost from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting being shut down. They've all raised that money, including locally here. WHQR had a big fundraiser drive, raised all of the money that they were losing from the federal government. So they're whole again. The community supported it and backed it up, which I'm glad. I mean, this show and many others that many of you probably listen to are crowdfunded, right? Your listeners, your audience supports you. We've got great advertisers and great friends and folks like Melissa Gott and her team over at the Law Group that financially support the show, are incredible members of the Nick Craig Show Patreon. So I'm glad that individuals backed it up. So that's one of their great plans. They want to spend trillions of dollars, $1.5 billion on healthcare for individuals illegally in the United States, and trying to essentially reinstate portions of the ridiculous federal monies that were doled out all across the world for, oh, I don't know, you know, transgender story outer in Zimbabwe and, oh, democracy teaching in sub-Saharan Africa and all of these great USAID programs that the government stripped out. And that's why I say that this is not a group of individuals that need to be taken seriously, at least with this. Again, don't take your guard down. We still have elections. Democrats are still competitive. But you just can't take this group seriously when it comes to this shutdown. It is amazing to me that 22 days in, there is still no messaging. 22 days in, hours worth of press conferences. This jackass is on the Senate floor this morning in an all-night binder reading a book about how democracy dies from a bunch of radical leftists over at Harvard. And this is the best thing that they've got. This is the best that they can push for. This is the best way to message this issue. It's pathetic. If I was a Democrat looking in on this, I'd be pissed beyond belief that this is the best that my party could do. It would have to be incredibly frustrating to watch this process unfold if you are a member of the if you are a Democrat and a member of the Democrat Party. It's got to be incredibly frustrating to watch this kind of lackluster response take place. And I included in the title for today's show, you know, there's seemingly no end in sight. I mean, Democrats don't seem to be willing to vote for the continuing resolution, which, by the way, I'm fine with. I don't particularly care if the federal government stays open or stays closed. I really don't care. It has no skin off my back. And honestly, it's probably better that things are in the position that they are right now. However, yesterday, President Donald Trump was at the White House and had a group of senators, all Republican senators, besides Rand Paul, who President Donald Trump took some jabs at yesterday, and talked a little bit more about the shutdown. This is what President Trump had to say yesterday afternoon at the Rose Garden.
Because the whole country would be bankrupt and you're not going to have any kind of medical insurance. So with us, it's the opposite. And it's a great bill. We don't need any more. And I want to just say from the beginning, our message has been very simple. We will not be extorted on this crazy plot of theirs. They've never done this before. Nobody has. You always vote for an extension. Chuck Schumer and the Senate Democrats need to vote for the clean bipartisan CR and reopen our government. It's got to be reopened right now. We're not doing that. They are the obstructionists. And the reason they're doing it is because we're doing so well. We're doing well all over the world. We're doing well with the close to $20 trillion that I just told you about. It will be that number. But even if you take it down to over 17, that's a guarantee. We're doing well with everything. Car plants are pouring back into our country. AI plants, we're leading. We're dominating China right now in AI. And I did something that I think you'd like. Because we have an old grid. It's a tired grid. It doesn't have the juice that you need to fire up these plants. You know, these plants will need more than double the energy.
That's President Donald Trump, at least in part, in the Rose Garden yesterday as a lunch took place with Republican senators and staff and folks that are, of course, in the United States Senate, saying that Chuck Schumer and Senate Democrats need to vote for the clean bipartisan continuing resolution to get the government back open. And, you know, I've talked about this before, and I feel the need to reiterate it again this morning. Donald Trump brings something to the Republican Party that we have not seen in decades. I mean, you probably have to go back to the Reagan era to see this level of kind of handling of issues from a Republican president. And it's his unwillingness, which is a good thing in this case, his unwillingness to cower to the media, cower to the Democrats, and cower to the so-called, and I'll put this in air quotes, public perception. This has been one of the biggest issues that has plagued the Republican Party for the last 30 years. Every decision that is made, or a vast majority of them, have always been made with, well, what's the media going to say about this? What is the New York Times going to write about this? What is CNN going to report? What is the public perception of this issue going to be? Ladies and gentlemen, none of that matters. Now, is public perception in politics important? Absolutely. Is reaction to things that are done in political circles important? Oh, 100%. I mean, politics at the end of the day is kind of a popularity contest. And I know some folks probably don't like hearing that, but it is. I mean, typically, the most popular person ends up winning. It's the individual with the name ID. Now, you can't just be popular. You have to have some level of policy to back it up, but it's a popularity contest. And for too long, Republicans have been of the mindset, and it has screwed them royally, but for too long, they have been of the mindset that if we do things that Democrats agree with, we will get good coverage from the media. If we cower to the Democrats' demands, we will get good press. And the reality is, not only does that never happen, but you end up pissing off your entire base. And for what? To get a good headline maybe once over at the New York Times? For what? To get a nice 15-minute segment on CNN where they're not punching and beating up Republicans? That's what you're cowering down for? That's what you're completely giving up the battle for, to get a segment on CNN? To maybe get a nice op-ed from the Wall Street Journal? You got to be freaking kidding me. I've said this before. The biggest word that has been a struggle, and the biggest phrase that has been a struggle for Republicans, is compromise. And it is a word that I think triggers, no pun intended, but triggers a lot of individuals on the right, myself included. Anytime you hear a Republican utter the word compromise, you can guarantee that the Republicans are screwed. I mean, completely and totally screwed. When a Republican says compromise, that typically means Democrats get 80, 90, 95, maybe 100% of what they want, and Republicans get nothing. That's what a compromise is on the right. And it's something that has been a growing pain point in more conservative Republican movements. We've got good ideas. We have a lot of policies and a lot of platforms and a lot of principles that the vast majority of the American public believe in and agree with. And if not wholeheartedly, some parts, right? We're not insane. We're not crazy. And so it's very unfortunate that politically in tune and politically engaged Republicans and conservatives have watched for the longest time at the tippity top of the Republican Party. Whether you're talking about individuals like Ronan McDaniel, who used to lead the RNC, when you look at individuals like Paul Ryan, who was leading the Republicans in the House during the first Trump administration in the latter years of the Obama administration, constantly compromising. Consistently giving up on the vast majority of Republican and conservative beliefs and ideals to pander to the media, to pander to the Democrats, thinking that, oh, well, when the shoe's on the other foot, they'll do the same thing. It is, as I've watched the North Carolina General Assembly this week, and I've listened to Democrats complain and moan about redistricting and maps, and, oh, you need to send this, you need to ask the voters, you need to put a constitutional amendment, you need to put this on a ballot. As I hear these comments from Democrats, who are, of course, not happy that Republicans are redrawing maps, I think to myself, if Democrats were in control right now, and Democrats had the authority to redraw maps in the General Assembly, which they would have if they were the majority, would they put this on the ballot for voters to decide? I mean, I'm asking this genuinely. It's not a loaded question. Would Democrats play by the same rules that they want Republicans to play by? I feel like I can say pretty confidently the answer to that question is no. And for far too long, Republicans and conservatives have had to sit back and listen to and get spoken down to by Democrats and those on the left about the rules that we should play by and how, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this. Meanwhile, when they are the party that is in charge, when they are the party that is in power, they don't follow through. They don't ask the voters what they want. And I don't think that they inherently should, right? When we look at the redistricting debate here in North Carolina, that is something that is solely the responsibility of the North Carolina General Assembly. That is something that is the sole responsibility of the majority party in the legislature. As it stands right now, Republicans are the majority. As it stands right now, the GOP not only has a supermajority in the North Carolina Senate, they are one vote shy of it in the House, and in both cases, they have a majority. And so with them having that majority, they are allowed to do things like redraw maps. And so as you hear these clarion calls from the progressive left and these radical leftists over, this is how you should do things, this is how you need to govern, this is how you need to lead, I think it is a fair exercise to ask yourself, would these individuals operate in the same manner? And I think you and I and most of us would be in agreement that the answer to that question would be no. It is consistently rules for thee, but not for me. That is how the Democrats operate. That is how the Democrats govern. So I give no solace. I don't have any sympathy for Democrats that are complaining about how unfair it is that the North Carolina Constitution says that Republicans, or excuse me, says whatever party is in charge, which happens to be the Republicans, have the sole authority and ability to redraw maps. I have zero sympathy whatsoever. And I can guarantee you, if the roles were reversed, and I don't like playing whataboutisms, I don't like saying, oh, well, when the shoe's on the other foot, but you can guarantee if Democrats were in power in Raleigh right now, the exact same thing would be happening. And some of you would say, well, yeah, and we'd be pissed off about it as well. Sure, absolutely. But what is the alternative? Republicans play by the rules that Democrats set for us, and then Democrats play by the rules that they set for themselves? Does that sound like something that is ever going to work in favor of conservatives or Republicans? Does that sound like something that is going to push Republican ideas and agendas forward? No, the answer is no. And I know I went a little bit off on a tangent. So getting back to where we were, one of the things that I love about Donald Trump is that he has changed this mindset in probably not all, but a lot of Republicans and a lot of conservatives. You even heard some of these comments echoed by Senator Ralph Heiss yesterday on the show. Fighting fire with fire. It is not often that you hear those words coming out of the mouth of a Republican, because they are typically too scared as to what the reaction's going to be. They are typically too scared of, oh, what is the media going to say? What are the Democrats going to say? What is the New York Times and the Washington Post going to write about it? So we cower. We back down into a corner, we give the Democrats what they want, and we go, yeah, but we got 1% of what we wanted, we lived to fight another day, and the media only beat up on us 80% of the time instead of 100. Give yourselves a round of applause. Great job, everybody. Those days are over. I'm just not interested in that anymore. And it is one of the reasons that I very much appreciate and enjoy what Donald Trump is doing. And it's not just Trump himself. I believe that he is giving courage to Republicans to hold the line, unlike we've ever seen. Again, going back to the Reagan administration is probably the last time. We have never really seen Republicans in this position. Now, you can make the argument, go back to some of the Tea Party movement, and sure, no question about it, but not to this level. I can guarantee you, if there was a different Republican that is not as unabashed as Trump in the Oval Office, John Thune and Mike Johnson, if everything else was the same, John Thune and Mike Johnson would have already caved to the Democrats. And that I'm not blaming them for it. Obviously, it's unfortunate that they would. But they would be getting so much pressure from weak Republicans in their caucuses. They'd be getting so much pressure from the media that they would cave. We've seen it 1,000 times before. You don't need me to reread the story for you. Donald Trump gives them the courage to stand up. And they know that the blowback from Trump will be worse than the blowback that they'll get from the media, from the Democrats. So it holds them in line and it holds them in check, which is maybe an unintended consequence of the Trump administration. And I think it's great. So here is John Thune at the White House yesterday. Again, this Rose Garden lunch taking place with senators yesterday in Washington, D.C. at the White House. Here is the leader of the United States Senate on the Republican side.
Well, Mr. President, thank you for having us. This is the fourth week of the Democrat shutdown, but we are all here today because your Republican team in the Senate is unified. This is now the longest full shutdown in history, but everybody here has voted now 11 different times to open up the government, and we are going to keep voting to open up the government, and eventually the Democrats, hopefully sooner or later, are going to come around. But Mr. President, your agenda is the right one for this country. This is your team. We are your partners in achieving and implementing the agenda that you campaigned on and the American people voted for. And you just mentioned it has been a series of promises made and promises kept, whether it's national security, whether it's the border, whether it's the economy, taxes, regulations, energy. Trump newborn accounts, school choice. You look at what we've accomplished so far. It is a remarkable, remarkable team and a record of accomplishment that can't be matched, and I would argue, at least in my time here, but perhaps in all of history. So thank you for your leadership, and we will continue to be good partners and work with you to get the work done for the American people. And let's hope that the Democrats get wise and, starting perhaps even today, vote to reopen the government so we can get back to work for the American people. Mr. President, thank you for having us at your home. You have beautiful homes. And thank you for everything you're doing to make this such a beautiful place. This is America's house. We're delighted to be here. Thank you.
And so there's the commentary from John Thune. And again, it's just not something that you are used to seeing from Republicans and conservatives. A government shutdown. Oh my God, I can't fathom that taking place. We can't be responsible for a government shutdown. We're going to get bad headlines. We're going to get beaten up by the Democrats if we shut down the government. People are going to be starving in the streets, and they'll blame us. So we can't do this. We can't allow the government to shut down. We can't be responsible for this. Not something that is typically done by those on the right. I am glad that this is happening. I am glad that Donald Trump is giving Republicans a spine, a backbone to hold the line on issues that, in this case, folks, once again, I'll reiterate, we are not talking about policy. We are not talking about a MAGA agenda with this continuing resolution. We are talking about keeping the government funded at the exact same levels that it has been funded for the last 7 months, 8 months, 9 months. That's what is at discussion this morning. If this bill was filled with a bunch of wish list items for Trump and the Republicans, we would be having a completely different ballpark, and we probably wouldn't be in the same situation that we are. But we're not, because there's no policy in it. It's literally just keeping the government open at the current funding levels. That's it. There's no wiggle room. There's no debate. There's nothing to even cave and fold on. There's nothing to... What are you going to do? Okay, we're not going to fund the government at its current levels. We'll cut it in half. Democrats don't want that. There's nothing to move. There's no negotiation to take place. There's nothing else to strip out. Democrats want to add a bunch of crap to it, but that's not a negotiation standpoint and tactic for the Republicans. It's just not. And President Donald Trump was in the Oval Office last night speaking to reporters, as he does. I will continue to make the point that he is the most accessible president that the United States has ever had. He spends, on an average week, hours upon hours speaking to the media, adding all of that combined. Sometimes multiple hours in a day, not only speaking to the American people, but taking questions from the media. The president was asked about ongoing negotiations with Schumer and Jeffries, and this is what the president had to say.
I'd love to meet with them. I just want them to open up the country first. You know, the country is so hot right now, and they've never voted against, you know, continuation. They've never voted against. They've never done that. They're doing this because they have Trump derangement syndrome. But I would like to meet with both of them. But I set one little caveat. I will only meet if they let the country open. They have to let the country open. The people want to go back to work. They want to be served. They want to. They need the services of some people, and a lot of people need the money, the payroll. So I'll do it as soon as they open up the country. I'd like to meet them.
So this is something that I would say that if I was Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer, I would have taken this offer weeks ago. You'll remember, and it's kind of interesting, President Trump said that he was willing to negotiate and talk healthcare with the Democrats. Now, just because he's willing to talk, and I think Schumer and Jeffries know this, just because he's willing to talk about an issue and listen to their strife and listen to what they have to say doesn't mean that they're going to get it. But the president has been incredibly willing with Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer. He has told them, we can have a discussion over some of the Obamacare credits. We can talk about healthcare. We can do these things, but you have to pass this continuing resolution, and then we'll talk about it. Democrats know that they're not going to get what they want because, folks, the reality is very simple, and it is exactly the same situation here in North Carolina over redistricting. Republicans have the majority. We'd have no obligation to work with you, the same way that you don't have an obligation to work with us when you're in the majority. That is how majority rule works. And you can say, well, that's the end of democracy. You can say that that is a crumbling of the United States and state governments. But that's how it's always been done. The party that's in the majority and has the votes does not have to work with anybody else. Now, if you can work with your colleagues on something, great. But if you're trying to push through your issues and your agenda and you're the majority, you have absolutely zero obligation, whether it's a Democrat majority or a Republican majority, to work with the other party. We've heard a lot of this in North Carolina over the last 2 days. Republicans didn't even talk to us before redrawing these maps. They don't have to. You guys have no say. The Republicans are the party that is in the majority. Why all of a sudden are we obligated to invite you into the room? You guys don't do that when you're in charge. I mean, go look at the first 2 years of the Biden administration. When Joe Biden was in the Oval Office and Democrats controlled the House and the Senate, were they constantly bending over and breaking their backs to make sure that the Republicans were in the room? Hell no. And I wouldn't expect them to. I don't want them to. You want the party that wins, the party that has the majority, to govern. You want them to be able to push forward their agenda. That's obviously why they got the majority of the vote from the American people. So it sucks when you're on the losing side of that issue, but folks, it's happened dozens of times throughout history. Party leadership changes. Party control changes. The majority changes. And it is the party that is in charge that has the majority that can lead and govern. It's plain and simple. So this constant crying and complaining about how we're not even in the room. Nobody's calling us. Nobody's talking to us. Who cares? You're not in the majority. It doesn't matter. We have no obligation to do so. I've got an interesting clip from Greg Gutfeld coming up as it relates to the government shutdown. We'll get into some of those details, plus some pretty big international news as it relates to the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine that started under the Biden administration. We'll get into those details coming up here in just a couple of minutes. I want to remind you that the Nick Craig Show streams live weekday mornings, 7 a.m. Eastern, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and is, of course, available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Early voting continues in southeastern North Carolina today. Some important elections coming up for the city of Wilmington. We will hear from city council candidate Richard Collier. We'll grab a quick break and wrap up a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show coming up after this. You're, again, watching or listening to the show live, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Richard Collier. I'm an engineer. In my career, I fix what's broken, solve problems, and I build solutions that are made to last. Wilmington deserves practical leadership, someone with real expertise and a long-term vision. I'm Richard Collier. And I'd be honored to have your vote.
And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us here this morning as we continue day two of the federal government shutdown. Does continue in Washington, D.C., going on right now. For those just joining us, you've got a Democrat senator from the state of Oregon in Jeff Merkley, who has been on the Senate floor all night. And actually, now he's talking about Trump weaponizing rather the Justice Department. Let's listen into a few minutes from the great senator, see what he's got to say.
With his public commentary. Are you scared? Don't you fear the risk posed by these two monsters? True to the form he's displayed, when going after disfavored law firms, Trump hits below the belt. The president ordered security clearances stripped not only from Krebs and Taylor, but also from everyone who works with them. Krebs at a private security firm, Taylor at the University of Pennsylvania. He's punishing his targets, plus their employers and colleagues.
Jesus, this is so lame.
First Amendment freedoms of association, be darned. And I'm just...
Be darned. Won't it all be darned? Okay, well, that was, again, very disappointing. I was hoping for a little bit of fire and brimstone. I mean, you got a guy up here who, and I get it. I mean, he's been speaking on the House floor for like, I don't know, like 11 hours now or something like that. So I get being a little tired, but like, if you're going to do an all-nighter, if you're going to fight to save our democracy, which is what we're told the Democrats are doing, they're protecting the Republic. Republicans are destroying it consistently. It's always the darkest day in democracy. The sky is always falling. You would assume you'd have like some level of encouragement or enthusiasm. I mean, this guy's literally reading a book. Can you think of anything else to put people asleep more than reading a book? I know a lot of folks listen to audiobooks. I'm not opposed to that. But you've got, you know, typically you hire somebody that is a good reader, a good like voice actor to read a book, makes it interesting and engaging. You've got this guy on the floor of the United States Senate right now, sipping his water. Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy. He is pulling security clearances from individuals. He is weaponizing the Department of Justice. He is a very evil and terrible and awful guy.
That's it?
Oh, having watched this, you know what? Changed my mind completely. Donald Trump and the Republicans, they need to bend over and they need to cave to the Democrats and they just need to reopen the government. My mind has been changed, ladies and gentlemen, listening to the great words of Senator Jeff Merkley out of Oregon. It is all, I have been leading you all astray for some time. We are dead wrong about this issue. It is time to reopen the government and Republicans need to give Democrats whatever they want. I'm completely convinced the good senator has changed my mind on this issue. What a freaking joke. This is what we're supposed, again, I opened the show with this. This is what we're supposed to take seriously. We're supposed to look at this and go, oh yeah, this is it. Shaking in our boots. I'm sure the executive team within the Oval Office this morning is shaking in their boots over reading the book, How Democracies Die, on the floor of the United States Senate. Great work, everybody involved. This poor guy's legislative assistant, who's been, pull this up quick again, this poor guy sitting on the right side of your screen, sitting to his left, has literally been sitting here all night. He runs out for a period of times to grab a new binder, probably more chapters from this book. This poor bastard has just been sitting here all night listening to this guy literally read a book. Can you think of anything more awful than that? I mean, you talk about living in a hellish landscape. It doesn't get any worse than this for me. Sitting, listening to this guy read a book on the floor of the United States Senate for 7 or 8 or 9 hours. Wow. Okay. So we'll move on from that. Greg Gutfeld made a great point on the Five last night on the Fox News channel about this current government shutdown. And he brought up a very interesting point that I could not agree with anymore. Here's Gutfeld.
The politician's biggest fear is that people realize much of what the government does is not essential. The government was created purely for things that we cannot do. The essentials, like military, not trans, military. But over time, it transformed into a massive, ever-expanding monster that is designed for its own self-preservation. Government was great until it got rich. And then as money flowed in, so did the corruption and the rent seeking. The non-essential now dwarfs the essential, and it fights to the death for its survival. That's why, like, you have a temporary spending bill that was supposed to be temporary, but, you know, it's easy to invite, but impossible to evict when you have bureaucrats. And it's funny to see the same people who are marching against no kings, fighting for a ever-increasing government, especially one that tells you how to behave. I mean, under Biden, we actually had a government that invaded your bedroom, invaded your family's bedrooms, invaded your children's locker rooms. You can't get more unessential and intrusive than that. If you are against no king, against no kings or for no kings, I forgot what it was, then you should be happy the government's shut down because they're out of your way. Finally.
Very interesting point there from Gutfeld. And the point he's making is from a purely governmental standpoint. We are now in day 22 of a government shutdown. And I would say, I've been, you know, out and about over the last 22 days like many of you have and will continue to be. Are you seeing people running through the streets of cities outside of the No King's Day on Saturday? Are you seeing people just clawing their way through the streets because the government shut down? Are you going into the grocery store and going into, I was in Walmart yesterday to pick up a couple of things. Yeah, people are there filling up their shopping carts, buying the things that they need, you know, just doing what they would do any other day. That is the biggest fear of the deep state. That is the biggest fear of government bureaucrats, is the government being shut down for 22 days and nobody really caring, which is kind of where we are. And that's essentially where we are. Now, things are going to get real interesting next week as the final the last paychecks for the month of October are supposed to go out to non-essential federal employees, and they don't come. So it is going to be fascinating to watch and see what happens with both sides. I really don't think that the Trump administration is going to move on anything. There's, as I kind of just laid out, there's nothing for them to really move on. Like, there's nothing for them to strip out of the CR because there's no policy in it. So the question's going to continue to be, can Trump keep Thune and Johnson in line? Can he keep them from caving to the political pressure that is undoubtedly going to be coming from the left? And on the flip side, will the pressure get so loud on Democrats, as they are the ones that have shut down the government, that they are forced to vote for this CR and then try and see if they can get any of their wish list items through the rest of this year? It's going to be fascinating to watch, but a very, very interesting point there from Greg Gutfeld. Quote, the politicians' biggest fear is people will realize much of what the government does isn't essential. Really strong line from Gutfeld. Couldn't agree with it more. I'll put a link to that in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. All right. In some international news this morning, obviously we covered the Zelensky-Trump meeting on Monday, talked about some of the things that are at play, what is going on with the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine. And I mentioned this on Monday. I've mentioned it before, and I included it as my take in the Nick Craig Show Morning Line email this morning. I think Donald Trump and his administration are getting very close to completely walking away from this conflict. And there's some new news this morning that is leading to that. This is over at Politico, and it reads as follows. President Donald Trump's second summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin is off. The White House said Tuesday that the planned meeting in Budapest announced by Trump just last week after his two-hour phone call with Putin was no longer in the works after Secretary of State Marco Rubio spoke with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on Monday. An individual from the White House getting anonymity to speak to Politico said, quote, Secretary Rubio and Foreign Minister Lavrov had a productive phone call. Therefore, an additional in-person meeting between the secretary and the foreign minister is not necessary, and there are no plans for President Trump to meet with President Putin in the immediate future. The rapid dilution of plans from another summit between Trump and Putin just 2 months after they met in Alaska stemmed again from Russia's refusal to budge from its maximalist position on what it would take for it to halt its war in Ukraine. And so this is what I have been mentioning now for months. Donald Trump is wanting, obviously, to bring this conflict to a close. Anybody that says otherwise is a clown. Anybody that says otherwise is just so steeped in Trump derangement syndrome that they refuse to give him credit for anything. This administration has spent so much time, money, energy, and effort trying to bring these conflicts to a close. And when things are not moving in a positive direction, it appears obvious, and we've seen this from Trump during the first term and now, he is able and capable of pivoting away from things. And that is what is going on right now. I mean, that is the situation that is unfolding. I don't believe that either side, if I'm being perfectly honest with you, I don't think either side is actually interested in ending this war. Ending this and getting to some level of peace. I've had that stance now for years, and I stand by it. Yeah, you get comments here and there, Trump, Zelensky at the White House on Friday, the Putin summit a couple of months ago, but that stuff's easy. Right? It's easy to have a public appearance with the president and say, oh yeah, we're ready to bring this war to a close. It's another to actually do it. And we have seen an unwillingness from both parties at a variety of times to actually bring this conflict to a close. an interesting comment coming in on our Rumble live chat. Even though it's probably saying that the Ukraine-Russia situation bores them, I agree. I'm in full agreement with you on it. And I think it's kind of boring the administration. They're doing everything they can to bring both sides together, and neither seemingly want to do it. And so I think we are at a pivotal point right now where this administration is very, very close to washing its hands of this conflict and saying, all right, EU, all right, European nations, all right, NATO, all right, UN, you guys are all centered in this area. Time for you guys to deal with this problem. We're done. We've put in the effort. We've put in the time. We've put in the resources. Neither of these sides are really coming close to a deal. So we're just done. We're going to move on. We're going to pivot to other things. You know, one of the things that makes somebody, in my opinion, a good and strong leader, whether you're talking about, of course, a president of the United States, but even smaller than that, a good business owner, an operator, a good leader, a good CEO, is somebody that is willing to pivot. Somebody that is willing to say, the things that are going on, the things that we are doing are not working. They are not leading us to, you know, in the case of a business, economic prosperity and success. So we're going to move away. We're going to pivot. We're going to try something new. Or maybe we're just going to abandon this thing completely because we're just putting good money after bad and it's not making sense. And I think that's where we are coming very close to with this conflict. In a press conference in Moscow Tuesday, Lavrov said he informed Rubio on Russia's position that a peace agreement must come before a ceasefire in its war with Ukraine, that has not changed. And he said he was surprised by a CNN report about disagreement during the call over Russia's maximalist demands. Lavrov said, of course, this is translated, I believe American officials have concluded that Russia's position has remained largely unchanged over time and remains within the bounds of its initial demands. Russia has not altered its positions compared to understandings and prolonged negotiations between Putin and Trump in Alaska. Russia has long called for the elimination of the root cause of the war in Ukraine, claiming that its growing alignment with Europe and desire to join NATO amount to an existential threat. Putin has questioned the legitimacy of Ukraine President Vladimir Zelensky and urged new elections in Ukraine. He also called for an end of the so-called persecution of Russian speakers and demands that Ukraine doesn't join NATO. He frequently peppers his speeches on Ukraine with unsubstantiated claims that the country is filled with Nazis. So you're hearing in this reporting exactly what the issue is. Russia has got set in stone what they want. They are truly not interested in, seemingly interested in any sort of negotiations whatsoever. And that is likely why this meeting in Budapest is not happening over the next couple of weeks. If you are trying to bring a war to a close, you would, and you'd have to, if you have two parties fighting, so you have to be willing to negotiate something, not everything, right? We're not talking about one side giving up 100% and the other side giving up zero. But you've got to be willing to negotiate. And it is obvious and clear, at least from this new Politico reporting and what we've been told and what seems obvious, that Russia is not interested in negotiating. They know what they want. They want the Donbass region. They want a vast majority, if not all of it. And it's obvious that Ukraine is not interested in giving all of that territory up. And so you've got to find some sort of middle ground. And if a middle ground cannot be found, then I not only believe this is what's going to happen, but I think it should happen. This administration needs to walk away. I don't want more people to die. I don't want more bloodshed. I don't want more conflict. I don't want more missiles. I don't want any of that. But at what point do you snap into reality and say, this is not moving in a positive direction? It is beyond time for the United States to back out of this conflict completely. No more money, no more resources, no more time. We've got a lot of other things that need to be dealt with. And if it is true, and it appears that it is from all accounts, that Russia is unwilling to negotiate on certain factors, Ukraine is unwilling to negotiate on certain factors, then it's done. There's nothing else to negotiate. Trump has done his damnedest. Rubio has done his damnedest. Steve Witkoff, all these guys have been busting their ass for months now to try and get some sort of resolution on this. And it seemingly isn't going to happen. You've got a individual in Russia, in Vladimir Putin, who is completely deluged by reality. I mean, he's not living in any sort of realistic war situation at all. Then you've got Zelensky over in Ukraine, who somehow believes that he is going to fight back and hold off Russia. There's no shot in hell of that happening. It hasn't happened for 3+ years now. I mean, it's both of these individuals are seemingly completely disconnected from reality. And the end result is it has cost United States taxpayers hundreds of billions of dollars. It has sucked dry aid in the United States. All for what? Nothing. We're the United States taxpayer, as you're out working your job today and paying, you know, half of your paycheck to the federal government, that money is going to subsidize the Social Security equivalent program in Ukraine. For what? So that they can fight, continue fighting for another 15 years? I mean, what the hell are we doing? Trump and his team, I believe, have done everything in their power to bring this to a close. They have opened the lines of communication, something that the Biden administration never even bothered to do. Not a single meeting, not a single phone call with Putin the entire time, because Joe Biden and his team were a group of bumbling morons. Trump has opened the line of communications. Putin was in Alaska 2 months ago. They've done everything that they can. At a certain point, you have to cut your losses and say, on to the next thing. And I believe that we are very close to that here. We know that the president's frustrated. He has made those comments publicly. I would imagine he's made even stronger comments privately. There was apparently a shouting match in the Oval Office last Friday with Zelensky. On a recent phone call with Putin, things got very heated, according to reports as well. He's frustrated, and rightfully so. He's trying to do this. And neither side is being, at this point, I don't think either side is being a good faith actor in all of it. Very, very frustrating for this administration. And I think the vast majority of the American people are at a point where if you're not going to make it happen, if you can't close the deal because neither side is truly interested in negotiations or peace, then wipe your hands, wash them off, and on to the next issue. Plenty of other issues and problems that need to be dealt with. So that is the latest that we are watching in kind of international news as it relates to the ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine. We'll keep an eye and see if anything relevant or anything interesting happens on that in the coming days and weeks. We'll bring it to you right here on the Nick Craig Show. All right. In Raleigh today, the North Carolina General Assembly, more particularly the House, is coming back in session. They'll be back at 10:30 this morning. They are expected to approve new congressional districts. It will be the last stop for that, unlike legislation that we typically see in North Carolina that has to go in front of the governor for approval. Legislative maps, well, they don't have that. So the map, once it is approved by the House, it made all of its Senate votes yesterday. Once it is approved in the House, it's done. The maps will be in effect. Candidate filing opens in early December, and that will be the end of it. Will there be litigation? Sure, as that's what the Democrats do. But these maps should be pretty well set in stone for the 2026 midterm elections. We'll keep an eye on what's going on in Raleigh today and bring that information to you. One quick thing I do want to note, saw this from the National Weather Service yesterday. There's an increase in fire danger today across southeastern North Carolina. According to the Weather Service, dry fuels, low relative humidity, and some gusty winds for your Wednesday are leading to that increase in fire danger. The National Weather Service is estimating that relative humidity values can drop by 25% to 30% with some 10 to 15 mile an hour southwest winds that will increase that fire risk. So individuals that are, that burn outdoor debris, burn boxes and things of that nature, make sure you are extra careful with that today due to some of these increased fire risks. That alert is in effect for Bladen, Columbus, Pender, New Hanover, and Brunswick counties. So if you have to do any burning today, hopefully you don't, but if you do, make sure you're watching that very closely as those fire risks are increased for your Wednesday. So that's going to do it. Keeping an eye on what's going on in D.C., what's going on in Raleigh, and some international stuff as well. We'll keep you up to date with all of it right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, that's going to do it for a Wednesday edition. Thanks to the law group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Melissa Gott and her team. Give them a call, 910-251-6088. Or visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. The Nick Craig Show streams live weekday mornings, 7 a.m. YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We're back here tomorrow morning for the Nick Craig Show.